Hi, I'm Doug Gordon, and this is Beta from Wisconsin Public Radio.
In here, I open the stairwell door and pull us both through it. The heavy fireproof door swings shut on the sound of partiers with an echoing metallic crash. If we're gonna fight, let's at least do it where no one can hear us. I don't wanna fight, Mac, Gwen chokes back her tears. I don't wanna fight either. For once in my life, I don't even wanna win. I wanna kill. I've felt it before, and I know the difference.
That's Amy Gentry reading an excerpt from her latest novel, Bad Habits. The two main characters are Mac and Gwen. They used to be the best of friends. They considered themselves sisters, but that all changes when they are both admitted to the same prestigious graduate program. The pressure and competition ramps up, leading to tragic conclusions. Amy Gentry drew on her own grad school experience to write this propulsive, gripping suspense novel. But she didn't start out as a crime writer. In fact, she says that she is an accidental crime writer.
I started writing my first novel, Good as Gone. When I started writing it, I thought of it as a family drama more. And even when I was feeling very extremely confident about it, as kind of a Henry James type psychological fake out novel, a literary novel. And it wasn't until I started really getting into the process and seeing that there were, you know, there was a kidnapping in that novel, there were dead bodies started to appear. And I began to think, perhaps this is actually a crime novel. But I had never been an avid reader of contemporary crime until I wrote that book, really. And it unlocked kind of a whole world for me.
You mentioned Henry James as being an influence on your fiction. How so?
I have always really thrilled to those deep and really weird delves into psychology that he does. And the idea of this tight, intimate circle, usually there's just three, maybe four main characters, especially in those late novels. And the plot really comes from those characters psyching each other out, manipulating each other, lying, but also sometimes surprisingly telling the truth in ways that manipulate instead of reveal. So that is kind of the dynamic I'm always trying to capture in my novels. And though they don't really, I think, come out like Henry James novels, I do return to that source whenever I'm having a block or I'm just not, my voice isn't coming. I'll go back and reread some late James especially. And it doesn't take much to really snap my brain back into that feeling. And once I've written myself through the first draft with all the too long sentences and the fancy language, then I often have the core of what I really want.
Let's talk about your latest novel, your third novel. It's called Bad Habits, and it focuses on this complicated friendship between two young women, Mackenzie Clare Woods and Gwendolyn Whitney. Can you tell us a bit about these two characters?
Yeah, they came to me in a dream, which is not usually the way a novel comes to me. But the vision of these two women reuniting in a hotel lobby after years apart, knowing that they had been once best friends and that now one of them wanted to kill the other is almost all I knew. And the other one of them is getting married and the other one wants to kill her. I dreamed this whole elaborate scenario in the hotel. You know, I started to delve into the psychology of the Mac character, who was the character who would want to kill her former best friend. And I wondered how she had gotten to that place. I thought of setting her in graduate school because I had that background and had sort of been waiting for a chance to use it as a backdrop for a novel. And I thought, what better place for a friendship to turn horrible and ugly than in a graduate program, a highly competitive one? And Mac kind of came from that. I knew she would be a first-person point of view character. I wanted her to feel a bit like Tom Ripley from the Patricia Highsmith novels. And so I knew that she had some challenges in her background and that she came to grad school already knowing that she was not enough, never feeling like enough. And that Gwen had been the character who had allowed her to get to grad school, and that following Gwen, who had seemed perfect, you know, rich, beautiful, but also incredibly intelligent and poised, that she had seen Gwen at a young age and attached to her as, like, this is who I need to be if I want to be enough, and I'll do whatever she does.
Mm-hmm. Both Mac and Gwen are grad students at Dwight Handler University. Can you talk a bit about this, the program that they're involved in and the culture surrounding it?
Yes, I had a lot of fun with that, making the program and even envisioning the history of this university and the campus was a lot of fun for me. This is a highly competitive program, and I was in a highly competitive graduate program in English in a northern industrial city. And it was my first time ever immersed in that kind of environment. I had come from a very laid back undergraduate experience and had really fallen into this program in Chicago almost by accident as well. And then immediately kind of found my footing and was in it for 6 years, and it became my life. And learning what that kind of environment was like. You know, people behave in bad ways when they are under constant pressure and stress, when there's only a very narrow way for them to succeed and limited resources for success. As in academia, there's no real job market for the humanities. And the people that you rely on to succeed in that environment are over you in this somewhat rigid hierarchy. They're your advisors and professors. And yet there are no boundaries. You're often encouraged to see them as peers and hang out with them as if they're peers. And yet they have total power over you, over your career. And so that was like such a compelling situation for me to put these two young women into, particularly Mac, who's always wanted to please, you know, her mother or her absent father. And it's just looking for someone to put all those feelings onto. And in academia, the cult of personality and that kind of program is like the perfect catalyst for that to go terribly awry.
For sure. And you take full advantage of that. This emerging studies program at Dwight Handler University features some pretty esoteric courses like diasporic feminisms, economimesis, and Professor Bethany Ladd's specialty, ethical negation. And these are actual real areas of study, aren't they?
No.
Oh, they aren't?
Not at all.
Okay, because I wonder, yeah. I thought you did, but I looked it up and I found references to I Googled and I found references to these.
Economimesis is certainly an article that Derrida wrote, and it is a little bit, it's one of the few like private jokes that I allowed myself to keep in the novel, because it was an article that I personally, it became my Waterloo in grad school. Like, I just could not get it, no matter how many times I tried to read it. And so I imagined that there was a professor who had built his whole career on this one article and was sort of a, you know, maybe a bit of a faker. Like, maybe there's a hint that maybe everything going on in this program is a bit of a scam. But at the same time, I didn't want to come down too hard on that, because as with my experience in academia, I actually found that there was so much that was really worthwhile there. It's just that it was often obscured and hard to understand, obscured by status play and insecurities, and also difficult to understand, because in an environment of such fear and pressure, it's a terrible environment to learn in. And so one of the sort of, I guess, sleight of hand I was trying to accomplish with the novel, and I hope I did, is that these courses really border right on the brink of something that could be real. Academics will recognize and get a chuckle out of it, I hope, that these are plausible, basically, courses of study. But also I wanted to convey that for Mac, it doesn't even matter if they're real or not. This is from her point of view. And they sound to her like gobbledygook, always just on the brink of becoming understandable, but never quite gets it. So that's how I sort of threaded the needle with that. I wanted them to seem recognizable. I sprinkled real things throughout to kind of tempt people to look it up. But yeah, I mean, I made up emerging studies. It's possible that it's a real thing.
Or it will be once that, you know, now that you, when your book comes out, it could inspire a real thing. You really are skewing and satirizing academia in this book. Why did you want to do that?
Well, first of all, it was just fun, Doug. I mean, first and foremost, when I'm writing to please myself. anyone who's been through an academic program like this comes out of it with a secret desire to write an academic satire, or not so secret. So I've known half a dozen people that swore they had an academic satire that they were writing. And I never really felt comfortable just writing a satire on its own, on its face. But when I came up with this idea for a thriller that had a real, to me, very, like a real heart to it, the plot meant a lot to me. But the joy of setting it in academia was partly that I would get to poke fun, not just like, haha, academics are, you know, silly, because I don't think that's very interesting. And also, they have, you know, value as well, but more to just pull up the feelings under those jokes and show some sort of ugly truths that are happening in that environment where structural inequality is often reproduced.
While I was reading the climactic hotel staircase scene in which Mac and Gwen are confronting each other, I couldn't help but think about the climactic bell tower scene at the end of Hitchcock's Vertigo in which James Stewart's character confronts Kim Novak's character. Was that something that was on your mind while writing this scene, or am I just overly obsessed with Vertigo?
Oh my gosh, that's such an amazing comparison. No, I have never thought about the bell tower, but that is brilliant. I'm going to just say in the future that that's what it was based on.
Okay, I'm glad you... Yeah.
But I do think psychically, you know, Hitchcock is one of the most psychically astute directors, right? Or was. And the images in his films are so primal and dreamlike, I think, in the way they tap into these aspects of our psychology, that I would not be surprised if it had imprinted, because the stairwell was really the big location in my dream. And I think there's something about that spiral upward, you know, they're climbing, right? Mac's a climber, and has always seen herself as climbing this difficult staircase up to the top. But where are they going, you know, and who is she? Who is she trapped with, and who is she becoming in the process? And I think, Vertigo has a lot of resonance, partly because of the doubles in Vertigo and the way women are sort of molded into one another. Certainly there's some resonance there with how Mac tries to mold herself into Gwen's image. So thank you so much for that.
Oh, no, thank you. Well, thank you for fleshing that out more, because I hadn't taken it to that level about the doubles and things. I hadn't thought it through enough, so thank you. The way you cross-cut between the action in the past and the action in December 2021, that staircase scene we were just talking about, it really adds to the propulsion of the narrative. Can you talk a bit about how you approach writing action scenes in your fiction?
Yes, I always have a sense of character, and I usually have a sense of setting, but action is really difficult for me. I struggle with it, and it often appears to me as, you know, images from a movie, the climactic scene. And I'll see those long before I know why the characters are there and doing what they're doing. I'll see those images and think, that seems like it. You know, I'll bookmark this and kind of, that's where I want to land. And those end up being the plot points that I move toward and structure the novel around. And of course, I'll throw them away if they don't work. It just gives me a motive to really get to that action and work out the plot, because I want to get to that scene and find out what happened. Going back and forth to the past, I always knew that the meat of the book would be in the past, because it's a book about the making of a villain. So we have to see Mac become that over the course of the book. But I kept that frame in the staircase where they're having the current day struggle, partly to give you something a little bit more suspenseful, to keep returning you to a single night and a moment that's urgent. Also because it just felt like the perfect end to their friendship, the capstone on this friendship. So it just felt inevitable to me that they would end up there.
Yeah, it's very well, your whole book is well written, but especially those action scenes, like everything, those are like really, really, really well done. There's a character in Bad Habits named Tess who comes to the program after working for a showrunner, which got me thinking that your novel could easily be a streaming series. So let's talk about the Netflix miniseries based on Bad Habits, which I'm confident is going to happen very soon. I'm thinking Anna Taylor-Joy from The Queen's Gambit would make a great Mac, and I think Rosamund Pike from Gone Girl would make a great Gwen, or maybe they should be the other way around. Does that work for you?
Oh, yeah, that's a good start. I mean, I have my own ideas about casting, but yeah, the most important idea I have about casting is that I think Kristen Stewart is sort of my Mac, right?
Mm.
I think she's got the, partly because she's a little older and the story takes place in two, you know, she has to kind of be able to switch back and forth between a 10-year gap.
Yes.
But also just because, you know, Kristen Stewart, one of the things I love about her, she looks kind of feral, you know?
Mm.
And I think that that's the look I need for Mac, you know? I think she's got something a little bit feral about her because, you know, she's just watching everything that's happening and clocking it and trying to convert it instantly into, you know, a set of instructions for how she should behave. But I wouldn't call her a sociopath, but she does have this very surfacey relationship to how, you know, how she should be behaving. She's just doing it to get something. So, I mean, there's a million young actresses who would do that part so much justice. And if any of them want to see the script, just give me a call.
Yeah. Fingers crossed that they will.
Absolutely.
Amy Gentry, thank you very much.
Oh, thank you so much, Doug. This has been really fun.
Amy Gentry is the author of Bad Habits, a novel of suspense. You can find out more about Amy and her book at wpr.org/beta.
I didn't relate to the violence, but I definitely related to someone who was so bullied or felt so bad as a teen that they turn inward and they become bitter and angry.
Comedian Mike Drucker joins us to talk about how playing the landmark horror video game Silent Hill 2 impacted his life and career. That's coming up in just a moment. I'm Doug Gordon. You're listening to Beta from Wisconsin Public Radio.